I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, our political debates continue. A little later, we'll hear from the candidates running for Barnstable County District Attorney. Up first, the candidates running for Barnstable County Commissioner. The Democrat is Mark Forrest. The Republican candidate is Leo Kakunis. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
And we're going to get right to it because we don't have a lot of time this morning. So opening comments, Mark Forrest, you're going to begin. Maybe tell us a little about yourself, why you want the job, your qualifications.
Sounds great. Mindy, thanks for doing this.
Sure.
Thanks for inviting us in. My name is Mark Forrest, and I'm running for county commissioner because I want to bring new ideas and leadership to county government here on Cape Cod. In terms of my background, I'm a longtime Cape Cod resident. I live in Yarmouth with my wife, Carol. We have two kids. They're products of the Dennis Yarmouth school system. They had a great education here. I myself went to the University of Massachusetts and have a graduate degree in public administration at Suffolk University. Much of my professional career has been really working here on Cape Cod, working in Cape Cod. I started off in the selectman's office working in the town of Harwich, working on grants and funding for the selectman there. And then I moved on to the town of Provincetown, where I worked in the town manager's office for many years, working my way up to become town manager. And while I was in Provincetown, much of the work that we had to do in that community involved dealing with the issues of water, wastewater, our fishing industry, our infrastructure along our coastlines, erosion, and a whole range of other issues that brought me into county government as well. I served as the town's representative on the Cape Cod Regional Transit Authority and a host of other regional boards and commissions. In Provincetown, I was known primarily for my work in the redevelopment of McMillan Wharf and bringing a substantial amount of federal and state aid to the town for water and sewer projects. After working in the town for a period of time, I got to know the congressional delegation quite well, was very active in securing funds from them, and then I moved on to work for Congressman Studs, where I was his district director for many years, and then I moved on to work with Bill Delahunt. Today, these days, I teach American government. I'm an adjunct professor at Cape Cod Community College. I do some development consulting for local governments in terms of funding and grants and helping them get resources, and I'm on the Cape Cod Conservation District. Thank you.
Thank you. Leo Kakunis.
Oh, well, again, thank you for having me here today. And, Mark, good to see you again. I'm seeing you more than I am my wife lately with all this campaigning going on. For your listeners out there, I live in the town of Harwich. I am married to my wife, Andrea. I have a 15-year-old daughter named Evangeline. I am a farmer. I have 63 acres of land in the town of Harwich. We are a certified organic cranberry grower. We have 20 acres of certified organic cranberries. And then we also run a small kind of a livestock operation. We sell fresh lamb and pork. I've been involved civically in quite a few things. Was president of Cape and Islands Farm Bureau for over 12 years. Also the state director to Massachusetts Farm Bureau for the Cape and Islands. Town of Harwich, I was the finance committee member for a number of years. From that, I moved on to the Cape Cod Commission. Was the town of Harwich's representative to the Cape Cod Commission for 5 or 6 years. And then I decided to get into the political realm and got elected to the Assembly of Delegates. And I currently serve on the Assembly of Delegates. For those of you that don't know, that's the legislative body of the county government. It is made up of a representative from each town. And now I've thrown my hat into a bigger political ring. For your listeners out there, the county commissioner's race does encompass all of Barnstable County. Each town from Provincetown all the way to Bourne is going to have the opportunity to turn out on November 4th and place a vote for who they want to see as their next county commissioner. The county commissioners are the executive branch, and basically I look forward to moving on.
All right, thank you. I will start with the first question, and Leo, this time we'll start with you. This kind of encompasses, I guess, jobs and affordable housing. A recent survey from the Cape Cod Young Professionals showed 1/3 of the young people surveyed felt the wages were sufficient to afford the cost of living here. 50% said they were considering moving off Cape Cod. How would you recruit and retain young families? What can we do on a county level to do that?
Well, I think there's two aspects to that question. One is affordable housing, and the second is jobs. I'll approach the affordable housing one first. I personally am opposed to building more affordable housing on the Cape Cod under the current structure of how it's done. When people do a 40B project and they build a percentage of that construction as allocated to affordable housing, and if the developer brings in money either from the state or federal level, then he has to or she has to open up that waiting list to people who are eligible for affordable housing, either from the entire state or from the entire country. And I don't see how constructing affordable housing under those guidelines are doing benefiting those that are living here today. So although I am an advocate for affordable housing, I want to see it done more locally, probably using something like the LIP program, so that we can allocate this new housing for people that are actually here and working here. The secondly part of that is jobs. We need to look at creating zoning and laws similar to the 40B laws that are on the books to create, or having developers create, affordable housing, but to have them create jobs. Currently, right now in the town of Harwich, we have a middle school that's coming up as a surplus building, and immediately people are looking at turning that into 54 housing units. I'm opposed to that. I spoke in opposition to it. I would rather see that building be put on the market and given to someone who's going to create jobs, even if that means giving it to that developer for free tax or free payment to the town, so they're going to use that building to create jobs for local people.
Thank you. Mark Forrest, same question.
Well, I think what we're talking about here is the high cost of living here on Cape Cod. It's a problem that we've had for a while, and it really transcends a whole host of areas, electricity costs, insurance costs, just the whole gamut of costs associated with just living here on Cape Cod. Specifically in terms of affordable housing, part of the problem that I think we have on Cape Cod is that we make it difficult at almost every level to either develop a business or to develop housing. It's almost like a landmine of obstacles and a very, very complicated roadmap for developers, for others that are interested in doing projects that might help meet this demand. It seems that it can be a very confusing and difficult process. I'm a believer in creating regulatory certainty, finding ways to make the ground rules very clear in terms of development. And in the area of housing, we really need to be focused on the rental housing market. I think there are a variety of tools, there are a variety of strategies that we can use. One of the problems we have right now is that when you look at the available stock of affordable rental housing, it's shrinking. And that's because we have major, second home market, retirees purchasing property and then taking it off the market. We need to find ways to create incentives for some of that housing to come back into the marketplace. And for some of the larger projects, we need to create a more user-friendly regulatory environment for that. So, but on the jobs side, I think the county can do a lot more in creating a much more robust economic development environment here. I think we need to revitalize the Economic Development Council. We need to have a full-time economic development director. I mean, these are positions that have been largely dormant, for many years. And I think right now what I'm looking to do is to revitalize our economic development efforts here on the Cape and do more to create real good jobs. They're there in terms of marine technology, ocean technology. I think in fishing we have opportunities. Even in farming, there may be opportunities there that are worth exploring. So I think the Cape, by growing the economy from the ground up, we can get a lot done.
All right. Next question. And Mark, this time we start with you. The wastewater management question. You knew that one was coming. That's a big issue. It's got a big price tag. There's been thoughts on, do we go this town by town? Do we do this regionally? Is there another solution? Your thoughts on wastewater management?
Well, I've dealt with water issues throughout my entire career in Provincetown, dealing with pollution of a nearby water supply and the impact that it had on the local community. I've dealt with the pollution problems and water quality problems at the Mass Military Reservation. When I worked with Congressman Studs, my role was to help find ways to sort of build consensus around a plan, and then secondly, figure out creative ways to get that plan financed. The biggest challenge is in terms of building consensus around what to do, all right? And that process has begun with the Cape Cod Commission in the whole 208 planning process. What they're doing, I think, is incredibly helpful in that we're expanding the toolbox for local communities in terms of how to deal with this issue. We're looking more at shellfish agriculture. We're looking more at wetlands. We're looking at a whole range of other innovative technologies. And quite frankly, we need more of those tools in the toolbox. One of the projects that I worked on was the establishment of a septic system test center out at the Massachusetts Military Reservation with the county. We worked on creating an area where we can test and develop new and innovative technologies. I think the Cape can use this crisis or this challenge as a way to stimulate new innovation in this area, particularly in the area of new clean water technologies. The funding of it is the whole other question. But we really need to identify what the overall plan is. And I don't think it's going to be easy getting regulatory support for it. I think the first job as a county commissioner would be to make sure that we build consensus locally here. Each watershed will have its own strategies, its own set of solutions. And then we're going to need to build regulatory support for it. Now, in each of the areas where we've had problems in the past, whether it's MMR or dealing with the problems out of Provincetown and Truro or elsewhere, oftentimes we've had difficulties in getting federal and state regulatory support. You know, in the beginning, they'll say that they're there to help and they're happy to help. But when you get into the trenches and work on it, it's a real battle, and it's one I'm prepared for.
Right, thank you. Leo Kakuna, same question.
Well, I think we have a situation here where many of your listeners may be concerned that the county wants to move forward into becoming, and I'm going to use the example, an MWRA, a sewer wastewater authority, and start implementing things which they will be the regulatory authority over the towns. And I will tell your listeners that I'm absolutely opposed to that, number one. I do not believe the county should become a taxing authority, and I do not believe the county should be involved in financing beyond the point of helping the communities, as Mark alluded to, go after the grants and go after the funding tools that they need. But I really am firm on the fact that I do not think that the Barnstable County should become an overall taxing authority. This is and has certainly been stressed that it is a watershed-by-watershed concern, and that's the way we need to deal with it. I think the county is doing a great job with the 208 plan. I believe that the county will be able to offer to the towns just what I said, planning, to offer the mapping, to offer through the 208 plan, the different incentives that towns and communities can use specific to that watershed on how they can reduce the nitrogen load. That goes from everything from, as I know is a hot issue, the fertilizer management plan, down to cleaning catch basins and doing things that will mitigate the leaves and the decaying organic matter, which also does impede our estuaries. It's not just sewerage. So I would certainly support and continue support in what the county is doing, being there for the communities and being an advocate of helping neighboring communities that share watersheds work out the specifics on the funding to do what they want to do as far as specific to that watershed.
All right, thank you. Leo Kakunis, we'll start with you this time. We've had talk of a third vehicle bridge. I know there is a third, there's a rail bridge, but a third vehicle bridge. And I want your thoughts on that as well as public transportation here in the county.
Well, third vehicle bridge is interesting. I do have a background in engineering. That's what my degree is in. I find it kind of odd that we spent all that money on that flyover. Yet on both sides before the entrance of the bridge, we go from two lanes down to one, then back to a two-lane bridge again. I think that was absolutely ludicrous, and I can't believe that engineers would allow that to go through after all the money we spent for that flyover project. As far as a third bridge goes, and I've been on record of saying this before, those bridges that we have now were built for Model A trucks and Model A cars. They were built in the 30s. They were not designed to handle the weight nor the vehicles that we have today with the number of axles that are under them. I think we need to get on some kind of a plan and be part of, as far as Barnstable County goes, in my position as commissioner, be part of the planning to see correct maintenance done to those bridges. As far as a third bridge goes, I would personally be opposed to one in the middle of the two bridges, but certainly maybe extending the ones that we have so that they're a little wider and safer to cross in conjunction with upkeep and maintenance. I think that's a necessity and needs to be done. I will tell you that I am opposed to a toll bridge, though. I think that the funding is there, and Cape Cod needs to get their share of it. And as a commissioner, I would be fighting for that. As far as transportation in general goes, I think the County Commission, Cape Cod Commission, has been doing a great job on that, especially looking at DRIs and requiring that they have bus stops. We have the bike path now that runs down through the Cape, and we are using that. A lot of roads are being improved with bicycle lanes. I think that's something that's not going to happen overnight, but it's something that's going to happen each project at a time, and I certainly would continue the good work that the county's doing in that area.
Thank you. Mark Forrest, same question.
Well, I think one of the things that I find upsetting is the fact that the discussion about all this is happening in Boston. The reality is the discussion should be happening here on Cape Cod, and as a county commissioner, I would insist that these discussions take place here, that the people need to be partners, need to be involved in this process, need to be really explained. It needs to be explained to us what the serious nature of the problems with the bridges is. What might we expect if nothing is done? The reports that I've received show that the bridges are in serious condition and something needs to be done. So we need to look at all the options. But Cape Codders, particularly the people in the surrounding communities, Bourne, Sandwich, the Upper Cape, really need to be a part of the process, need to be at the table. I recognize it's an issue that's Cape-wide, but nonetheless, the communities here need to be here. So if elected, I would make sure that that process happens here. With respect to the tolling aspect of it, I think Leo makes a good point. And that is that, you know, the Cape contributes an enormous amount of money to the Commonwealth. To some degree, we're a cash cow for the Commonwealth. I find it insulting, quite frankly, that the first option off the bat here is to talk about this facility being a toll bridge where we end up having to pay for it. I think the starting point should be the feds and the state participating and paying for it. And we need to explain and lay out what the benefits are in that sense. New Bedford's getting $1.5 billion rail system, and the state's paying for that. The feds are paying for that, and there's no questions asked. I think we deserve the same kind of consideration. Now, in terms of public transportation generally, I served as co-chair of the Public Transit Task Force here on Cape Cod. We built a consensus vision several years ago at the county level on what we can do to improve public transportation here. We've implemented phases of it. The key part of that system that I was very proud of that we implemented was the creation of the FlexBus. We used our plan as a way to leverage federal and state dollars to get the FlexBus, this new expanded public transportation system on the Lower Cape, up and running. That's the kind of role that the county can play in leveraging other dollars.
All right, thanks. You know, I have like about a minute to play with here, and that's not enough for questions. So I'm going to give you a little extra time for your closing comments in case you want to touch on some subjects that we haven't talked about. And so, Leah, we are starting with you, Leo Kakuna. So 2.5 minutes to wrap up whatever we didn't touch on and why you're the best
Excellent.
Candidate for the
well,
job.
Well, the area I think that I didn't get a chance to touch on in my opening statement is why am I running? And I just want your listeners to know that as an Assembly of Delegates member, I have brought forth a number of different issues that are on the table today that the county is facing. And I want to be elected as your next county commissioner so I can see those specific items come to a conclusion. And because we don't have enough time, I won't get into explaining them, but I definitely want to at least list them for your listeners. First of all, the license plate funds. I want to know why $2.3 million went to the Cape Cod Commission in the last 5 years and not 220 small businesses that could have gotten $10,000 grants from that fund. Transparency, not only in the budget, but in all aspects of county government. We've had an enormous problem with transparency and accountability. I filed a number of different resolutions specifically to that and to the relationship of Bonsable County government in both the Cape Light Compact and CVIC, and I would like to see that brought to a conclusion. Cape Light Compact, as many of your listeners probably know, is facing right now a decision from the Department of Revenue on whether they're collecting a tax or a fee. That's an important issue. I brought that up. I filed a resolution with the Assembly of Delegates, which asked the Department of Revenue to come down and research that with us. We need a full-time administrator. The current county administrators have hired an interim administrator. Why? I have no idea. We need a full-time administrator. The county complex is a huge complex. We have a number of different buildings. When a member of the public goes down there, it's very difficult to find out what building the office that they're looking for. The Assembly of Delegates is located in the District Court. The County Commission is located in the Superior Court. Family Court is located in the Registry of Deeds building. We really need to have a 5-year plan consolidating all the aspects of county government into one building. We have the old jail. We've done a wonderful job turning the old gymnasium into a state-of-the-art county health lab, and there's no reason why we should not be looking at continuing to expand that building and renovate it so that all county departments can be located in one simple location. So those are the things that I was a part of and started as an Assembly Delegate member, and those are the things that I'm very anxious about completing as your next county commissioner.
Thanks, Leo Kakuna. Thank Mark Forrest.
Again, Mindy, thanks for having us on. It's great being here. I want to become county commissioner because I want to bring new ideas, new leadership to county government here on Cape Cod. We're at a very unique and very challenging time in terms of our history, with challenges of clean water, coastal restoration, building and strengthening a year-round economy, and a whole host of other challenges dealing with the whole question of the cost of living, making it more viable for people to live here year-round. It seems like as each year unfolds, it's becoming tougher and tougher for people to make a go of it here. I do a lot of work with food pantries and work with other human services groups. And it's just, it breaks my heart to see the needs continue to grow and people continue to sort of struggle in terms of making ends meet. One of the issues that I didn't talk about that's a very, very much a pet issue for me is in the area of housing, particularly the growing need for assisted living, senior-oriented housing, housing to deal with what we're experiencing here is a growing elderly community here on the Cape. And while I appreciate the focus with the young professionals and younger families and the struggles that they have, one of the things that we can't lose sight of are the challenges that our older citizens are facing in terms of making a go of it here. The financial debacle, really hurt a lot of folks here on the Cape in terms of their nest egg and their retirement income. And we need to be aware that as people sort of get to the point where they need to move into a different housing arrangement from, you know, and perhaps into assisted living, that the options that I have available to them in their twilight years are becoming more limited. The county years ago was involved in a very ambitious initiative on affordable assisted living. We did a project up in Bourne. I think that's an area that we have to look at in the future. How can we partner with our local communities and housing organizations to address that issue? The other issue is veterans and returning veterans. I was very involved in getting healthcare clinics established here on Cape Cod for our veterans. It was a priority. It was a struggle. It was a battle. It was difficult. But that's another area of housing where we have an opportunity to sort of end homelessness for our veterans here in the region. So I think as a county commissioner, I bring a lot to the table in terms of experience and professional background. And I just ask the people listening for the vote of support. Thank you.
Mark Forrest, Leo Kukunis, thanks so much for coming in and sharing your thoughts with us. We're going to take a quick break to have a quick look at the ballot questions, and then we'll talk to the candidates running for Barnstable County District Attorney. You're listening to The Point. Now a look at the statewide ballot questions.
Ballot question one would eliminate the requirement that the state's gasoline tax be adjusted every year. Currently, each year, the tax is adjusted by the percent change in the consumer price index compared to the previous year. Those in favor of question one want to end the linkage of the gas tax to inflation. They argue that when there's an automatic tax increase without a vote from the legislature, it's taxation without representation. Those against question one believe the gas tax is essential to repairing and replacing unsafe bridges and roads in Massachusetts. Under the state constitution, revenue from the gas tax can only be used for transportation needs.
Question 2 on the ballot pertains to expansion of the Beverage Container Deposit Law, or Bottle Bill, by requiring deposits on containers for all non-alcoholic, non-carbonated drinks, except beverages primarily derived from dairy products, infant formula, and FDA-approved medicines. Those in favor of Question 2 argue it will result in more recycling, less trash and litter, and savings for towns' waste management costs. Those opposed to question two argue it would be expensive, only nominally improve recycling rates, waste tax dollars on an uneconomical and old system, and raise the deposit every 5 years without a vote.
Ballot question three seeks to expand prohibitions on gaming by prohibiting casinos, any gaming establishment with slot machines, and wagering on simulcast greyhound races. Those in favor of question three argue there's often no development spinoff from casinos. Moody's has downgraded its casino outlook from stable to negative, and Fitch Ratings said the casino market is, quote, reaching a saturation point. Those in favor of question three believe there are better ways for Massachusetts to raise revenues. Those against question three want to preserve the state's expanded gaming law, which they say will generate thousands of construction jobs and permanent jobs and hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue for Massachusetts cities and towns. Those against question three also argue that the current law already ensures communities opposed to a casino are protected from having one.
Question 4 on the ballot would entitle employees in Massachusetts to earn and use sick time according to certain conditions. Those in favor of question 4 argue thousands of working people in Massachusetts are forced to choose between going to work sick or losing a day's pay, or worse, their jobs. Some are even forced to send a sick child to school to save their income or job. Those against Question 4 want to protect Massachusetts small businesses from the burden of providing up to a week of mandatory paid sick time and family leave to all employees, including part-timers. They believe the red tape and mandate would be costly to small businesses and taxpayers.
Coming up, Barnstable County District Attorney candidates Michael O'Keefe and Richard Berry. You're listening to The Point. We now welcome the candidates running for Barnstable County District Attorney, the Republican candidate Michael O'Keefe. The Democratic candidate is Richard Berry. Welcome to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy.
We're going to start with opening comments, maybe your qualifications, who you are, why you want the job. And Richard, we're going to start with you.
All right, Mindy. Well, thank you for the opportunity to have me on your show here this morning. My name is Rick Berry, and I'm running for district attorney. I'm a former assistant district attorney, was hired in 1990 and served in the district attorney's office from 1990 to 2002. Shortly during my second year in the DA's office, my father contracted cancer. Unfortunately, passed away, and at that point, I decided I had to go back home and work up in my dad's former business and take care of my mom. Essentially, I have been a criminal defense attorney for it will be 25 years next month. I have over 20 years of public service. I was on the Barnstable Town Council for 12 years, the Zoning Board of Appeals, president of the Cotuit Civic Association, and also served on the local Water and Fire District Prudential Committee. I live in Cotuit. I'm married to my wife, Hope, who's a preschool teacher over in Marston's Mills. I have two children, Jake, who is 14 years old, and my daughter, Tegan, who is 10 years old. I decided to run for the position of district attorney as a result of the drug epidemic that's happened here on the Cape and Islands. Since 2009, chemists are required to come into the district courts of the Commonwealth and testify in court. Quite simply, that doesn't happen here on the Cape and Islands. And it hasn't happened in 5 years since my opponent has been in office. So while we have a drug epidemic here on the Cape and Islands, the DA's office can no longer prove drug cases in the district court. So I have a couple of ideas how to resolve that issue, but I guess I'm running out of time, so I'll defer back to you.
Still have another 15 seconds. For you
okay.
Take it. Go ahead. I'll go like this when you have 10 seconds.
All right, fair enough. Well, essentially, that's it.
Okay,
I don't
thanks.
Think I can do it in 10 seconds.
Okay, Michael O'Keefe.
Good morning, Mindy. Rick, I thought you were in the DA's office for 2 years.
That's what I said, 2 years. From 1990 to 1992.
Oh, you said from 1990 to 2002.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But, Mindy, I've been a prosecutor in the district attorney's office for 30 years. I've devoted my professional life's work to the prosecution and prevention of crime. I've done every job in the office, from being a junior prosecutor in the district court, as my opponent was, to being the six-man jury prosecutor, the superior court, major felony prosecutor, the major homicide prosecutor in the office, then first assistant district attorney, and then elected district attorney in 2002. In those years, I've innovatively dealt with the problems that we face in our communities. I've created a drug court, a sex offender management unit, a diversion program for kids, a truancy prevention program to keep kids coming to school. It's now in every school district on the Cape. A high-risk domestic violence task force, an elder abuse prosecution unit. I've been elected president by my colleagues statewide as president of the Massachusetts District Attorneys Association on two occasions. I've been asked to lead them on many issues with statewide impact for criminal justice issues. The governor, a Democratic governor, has appointed me repeatedly to the Medical Legal Commission, most recently to the commission to study the salaries of ADAs and CPCS full-time attorneys. But I don't do it alone. I've assembled a team of dedicated assistant district attorneys who know that when I tell them something, that they can count on it because I've walked in their shoes. They do a tremendous job for the people of the Cape and Islands.
Thank you. First question, and Michael O'Keefe, we'll start with you. Going to that opiate question, Cape Cod leads the state in opiate overdoses. This heroin epidemic has also led to a rise in property crime. What measures can the district attorney's office provide to help alleviate that problem?
Well, Mindy, as I've been to a forum on this opiate issue in virtually every town on the Cape this past winter. And, you know, I talk to people in trying to explain to them that there are two sides to this coin. The police and prosecutors traditionally operate on the interdiction side of this problem, and that is we arrest, prosecute the traffickers of these substances. Most recently, we, together with our federal partners, took down a major heroin laced with fentanyl operation in Falmouth. You know, that's the role of the police and prosecutors. The other side of the equation is treatment, prevention, and education. And that's a public health issue and a societal problem, and we have to do more with respect to that issue. Now, I recently brought Cheryl Bartlett, the Commissioner of Public Health, down to the Cape to get her to go back to the governor and waive the restrictions at DPH that would prevent local police officers from carrying Narcan. And I just paid the bill for the Narcan to be distributed to every police department on the Cape. Stepping out of our traditional role of interdiction, if we can save a life by administering that really impressive drug to someone who's recently overdosed, then we want to make sure that happens. But we've, you know, when someone reaches the downward spiral that they're coming in contact with police and our office in this disease of addiction, you know, it's a pretty tough set of circumstances. We have to concentrate, again, as I say, on the other side of the question and do more with treatment, education, and prevention.
Thank you. Rick Berry, same question.
Mindy, yeah, thank you. It's a difficult situation. Obviously, I think Michael did a good job describing the spiraling of the people who fall into the disease of opiate addiction and how their life can spiral out of control. What I see is the function of the district attorney's office. 98% of all the crime, the possession crimes, possession of heroin, are dealt with in the district court. And again, back to this issue that you need a chemist to come into the district court to testify. And that doesn't happen here on the Cape and Islands. The state police lab is severely overburdened, and it needs more chemists, a lot more chemists, to come down and testify in these cases. So you can afford an addict, someone who is addicted to heroin, perhaps their first time into court, an opportunity. What would you like to do? Would you like to go into a rehabilitation program, or is incarceration the option? So essentially, it would give the district attorney's office, if they could prove these cases in the district court, and there are thousands of them, it would afford us an opportunity to get these folks at an earlier stage before this addiction starts to spiral out of control. Now, I have two suggestions on how we can do that. One is the county lab. We expand the county lab. They have the equipment. They have the technology. They just need the employees. It's up on the hill in Barnstable Village. And the other issue is to privatize it. There's a lab in Mashpee that can handle up to 6,000 samples a day. I'm sorry, 600 samples a day at a cost of $50 a piece. The turnaround is essentially a day. Those folks can come into court, they can testify, we can speed up the criminal justice system, we can process cases, and we can get this issue resolved. But my opponent talks about the drug dealers, and he's correct. We need to prosecute those drug dealers, put them in state prison, but we need to also have the ability to convict, or the potential to convict, people who are charged with simple possession crimes.
Thank you. Our next question, Rick Berry, we start with you this time. Voters approved medical marijuana dispensaries in the state. Unlike alcohol, which dissipates from the bloodstream quickly, many drugs can remain detectable for days after intoxicating effects have worn off. What impact might this have on OUI enforcement?
That's a very difficult issue. I've had some conversations with some of the local police chiefs. And it's a very serious issue. We need to make strides. Where we are right now is essentially if someone is pulled over for an officer suspects that someone's impaired, they use the traditional field sobriety test. Well, the traditional field sobriety tests are for alcohol and the indications and reactions of your body to the effects of alcohol. So essentially, the tests that they're using out there right now aren't working and aren't designed for marijuana. The particularly better thing about marijuana than alcohol is that people don't generally get crazy on marijuana as they potentially do on alcohol. So we need to explore that issue. There's nothing out there right now. We need to develop something.
Michael O'Keefe, same question.
Well, you know, this notion that marijuana is somehow a harmless drug is, I think, a fallacious one. And it'll be interesting as we go forward into 2016, Mindy, when the complete legalization of marijuana is on the ballot here in Massachusetts, and that ballot question is being prepared now by the proponents of that. And, you know, we intend as district attorneys across the state to engage in that fight. I hope we'll be able to bring the district attorney from Denver, Colorado, and the district attorney from Seattle, Washington, and a few other of the states around the countries that have gone down this road, and it is really a terrible public policy decision to make. We have all kinds of problems with these ballot question laws. Look at the medical marijuana dispensary issue. It's a mess. It's a mess because there is no thought contemplatively given to it by the legislature. And frankly, the legislature sometimes is afraid to fool around with a ballot question once the public has passed it. And so we're stuck trying to enforce a terribly bad law. And all of those issues you mentioned of operating under the influence of marijuana and many other issues are going to be very, very vexing to the police.
Thank you. This time, Michael O'Keefe, we start with you. Are mandatory minimum drug sentences adequate, or should there be changes?
Well, I proposed in 2012 to Senate President Murray the reduction of 25% of the amount of time that one would serve in a so-called min-man, and raised the amount of drugs that would trigger that even reduced sentence. That passed the Senate in 2012. So we recently have engaged in the reform of mandatory minimum sentences. But to eradicate them completely, in the midst of this opiate crisis that everybody acknowledges, I think is a very, very poor public policy decision once again. Not only would it put more drug traffickers on the street more frequently, but think of the message that it's sending to kids. Think of the idea that first we decriminalized, you know, less than an ounce, and then we've got this medical marijuana thing, which I respectfully suggest is not working terribly well here in Massachusetts. And now we're going to say, well, again, it's young people that are listening to these messages. Once again, we don't think this drug is very serious, so we're going to, you know, or drugs are a big problem, so we're going to reduce the punishment that people who traffic in them. I think it's a mistake.
Thank you. Rick Berry, same question.
Mindy, thank you. I, to a large part, agree with my opponent on this, although I would not have supported the reduction of minimum mandatory drug sentences for people charged with trafficking of cocaine, heroin, or any other opiate. So I think that the support of that is essentially is weakening the position of law enforcement to fight the opiate addiction problem.
Thank you. Rick Berry, start with you this time. What role should the DA's office play in regards to public education?
That's a great question. As I said in my opening, I have kids, and I've been out as well, going all over the Cape and the islands, looking at this opiate addiction. And how can we attack it? And about 2 weeks ago, I went over to Dennis Yarmouth High School, and there was a speaker who was a former basketball player for the Celtics, Chris Herron. And the guy was a very talented basketball player from Fall River, and essentially fulfilled his childhood dream of being a basketball player for the Boston Celtics. On that journey to become a professional basketball player, he essentially got an an opiate addiction problem. And because Mr. Heron went into the school where there are a lot of kids who emulate professional athletes and so on and so forth, a lot of times guys in suits like Mr. O'Keefe and myself, we could talk till we're blue in the face to kids. But a gentleman like Mr. Heron who comes in to the school and talks about how he snorted some cocaine and then he bought one $20 pill ruined 20 years of his life. So to spend money that the district attorney's office has through forfeiture funds, to have people like Chris Heron come in and speak to the youth, I think is marvelous. The Heron Project and other similar projects like it, I think, are not the solution to the problem, but clearly will help deter children. And I'm talking about young children as well. We need to start this as much like the war on tobacco. That was started when I was a kid. You'd turn on a movie or a TV and everyone had a cigarette in their mouth. And nowadays, you don't see that. So it's not something that's going to be changed overnight. We need to start We needed to start working on it 5 years ago. And there hasn't been any work done through the district attorney's office.
All right. Michael O'Keefe, same question.
I sometimes marvel when I listen to my opponent. We're in every school in the district, Mindy, every single week with our roundtable, our school resource officers, our outreach employees from my office who deal with the schools every single week, every single school. You know, one of the things that I learned that was very disturbing in the course of listening to a number of doctors and psychologists around this opiate issue is when I was a kid, the onset of anxiety in kids would happen around puberty. And then the depression that follows that, you know, several years later, 18, 19, the experts are telling us now that the onset of anxiety in young kids is around 9 or 10, and then the depression that follows is at around 11 or 12. And if somebody says to a kid, here's a beer or a joint, and you're behind the school, and that alleviates that anxiety, that's a very, very powerful thing for a kid to inculcate into his experience. That's why I support things like Karma Choice in the schools. It's a way of getting kids to deal with the issues that they feel in a different way. And we, you know, I've given thousands of dollars toward those kinds of programs because we think they're important for our future generation. So the suggestion that we're not doing anything at schools, like many of the other suggestions I've heard, are just patently ridiculous.
All right. Going to give you two.
To that, please,
yeah, go ahead. 30 seconds.
Certainly. I have filed a request from the District Attorney's Freedom of Information Act requesting what the DA's office does with their drug forfeiture funds. And I've got the forms in front of me right now. And from fiscal year 2008 through 2013, they've been given $1,058,703. And a portion of that money can be given to drug rehabilitation, drug education, and other anti-drug or neighborhood crime watch programs. From their own records, in 2008, they donated nothing to that. In 2009, they donated nothing.
Okay,
in 2010, they donated nothing.
Rick, let me let you do that in closing. I want to make sure you guys have enough time for closing comments.
Fair
so
enough.
If you want to add something to that, Michael O'Keefe, we'll start with you. I'll give you a little more than 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Are we closing?
Closing, yep.
Right. The work of being a district attorney, Mindy, is hard work. This isn't a deliberative body. It's an executive position where hard choices are made each and every day which affect people's lives and the quality of the community's life. We strive to be fair and just with every decision and to do a better job when we fall short, and we occasionally fall short. I was gratified 2 weeks ago when the Democratic Speaker of the House addressed the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce at lunch in Hyannis and said that when he wanted to revisit the domestic violence laws in the wake of the death of Jennifer Martell in Waltham, he called me. And together with other stakeholders, we crafted a bill that was signed into law this year that's going to improve the tools that prosecutors have to deal with that troubling issue. So, you know, while my opponent can talk about this opiate thing, a very important issue, it's in the news, it's the issue of the time, but you'll remember, Mindy, just not too long ago, domestic violence was the issue. We have to, in the DA's office, have many balls in the air and keep our eye on all of them and deal with all of them. And that takes professionalism and experience. And I would just ask the voters to compare the legal resume and career of myself with anybody who would seek this job, and then decide who it is they want to hire as their lawyer in the criminal courts of the Cape and Islands. Thank you.
Thank you. Rick Berry.
Thank you, Mindy. And I'd like to thank everybody for listening out there. My opponent brings up his professionalism, and I think that is something that needs to be examined. He was assigned to be the lead prosecutor in the Krista Worthington murder trial, and he was removed from that trial from prosecuting it as a request by the Worthington family after he made disparaging remarks about the victim in a murder case's promiscuity. In that same case, they put a dragnet out asking for everyone to voluntarily give DNA with the promise that once the case was solved, he would give it back. A gentleman named Keith Amato was forced to sue the district attorney's office, the state crime lab, and also the state police. The ACLU took the case up. They prosecuted it and successfully won. And there were some pretty ugly remarks that were made about how this matter was handled. The next thing my opponent was wrapped up in was a gambling scandal involving Adam Hart, William Nefertosis, and Timothy Reardon. And the case started when it was reported that somebody from an elected official from the district attorney's office tipped off these folks that were having... that were conducting this illegal gambling operation. Hart and Nefertosis pled guilty to obstruction of justice for being, as a result of being tipped off by an elected official. And on my website at richardberry.org, I have this transcript. It's on page 29 to 30. As a result of that, the district attorney was forced to open an attorney account with the Office of Political and Campaign Finance. Ended up hiring Jay Carney, who was Whitey Bulger's attorney. There was another instance where his house was broken into and a gun was stolen. When it was asked whether or not he had a license to carry, he wouldn't comment. But when the police chief, Michael Miller, was asked, he reported he didn't know if he had one previously, but he had one now.
All right, that's a little over 2 minutes, but pretty serious accusations. 30 seconds to respond.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of, sort of, trashy kind of politics that I think is unworthy of the Cape and the Cape's voters. The idea that I was removed from a case is patently absurd. In this large yellow folder in front of me are the docket entries of the Commonwealth versus McGowan case. I represented the Commonwealth in that case from the beginning to the end. This alleged gambling scandal, if you're the district attorney and you've done your job properly, sooner or later, someone who gets in trouble is going to say something about you that comes to nothing, this did.
We're going to have to
leave
it there.
Mindy.
10 seconds to why they should vote for you.
It's about integrity.
We need to restore integrity in the district attorney's office.
All right. Rick Berry, Michael O'Keefe, thank you both for coming
in.
Thank
you, Mindy.
Have a good day. Thanks, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vince produces The Point. With assistance from Jenny Junker, the executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH. The Point is produced by Amy Vince, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of WCAI, the local NPR station for the Cape, the Coast, and the Islands.